Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast, with him, Ian Morris.
And him, Nate Langson.
That's the one.
You have to start it in anger.
Yes. Well, I'm not very angry. I am cold, I'll be honest. It's freezing
cold
in this room. It's never normally cold.
Why is this Mac of mine not always telling me the temperature like Windows is?
I don't know, mate. I don't know. I have had a very exciting week planning the time that I'm going to have off over the next 3 weeks, and a huge amount of it's going to involve being with a cat in Edinburgh.
Delightful.
He is.
And a good cat too. Very good ginger cat.
He is. He's orange. He's very full of love, and he plays hide and seek very well with my brother. So that's...
Does he suffer from that ginger cat problem of being insanely stupid?
No. He's extremely clever.
No, that's good.
Yeah, he's
extremely clever. I mean, I have met Toulouse and I do think he's an amazing cat, so I do completely agree. And I don't buy this ginger cat's a thick thing, really, but there are some funny things backing that up.
I have seen people who are stupider than the average orange cat.
Oh, sure.
So, you know.
Yeah.
But
just head on to
that's
Twitter.
Enough about politics. Heyo. Let's talk about something else. Here it comes. Here it comes now. The BBC wrote... The BBC wrote this week that Apple is rolling out its self-repair service to the UK and several other countries in Europe. This means if you are one person who has an iPhone 12 or a 13 and has broken it, or if you've got a MacBook and have broken it, you might be able to fix it yourself simply by buying or borrowing parts and tools and reading 85-page manuals that Apple will now provide you. This comes after a launch in the US more than a year ago. I think we talked about this in November last year, 2021. And it follows pressure from campaigners who basically, they're part of a right to repair movement that I wildly think is a good idea.
Yeah.
And they've been frustrated a lot by Apple basically trying to control the repair process. You know, you have to use very special tools or it will void your warranty or you can't do XYZ with your products or we won't repair them without huge cost. Anyway, those people have also said that it hurt independent shops who could otherwise be perfectly capable of repairing your phone, but Apple controls that process. So Apple said it's going to bring this to the UK, seven other countries as well. Repair options will include fairly simple things, or at least what should be simple things, like replacing a battery. But of course, the nature of, I mean, not even just iPhones, frankly, but all modern smartphones are made very complicated by the fact that they're extremely small. They use an awful lot of glue. They require a lot of heat to take apart sometimes. And if you break even the tiniest little thing, it can have pretty bad consequences. However, this is a little different than trying it just using tools you source from your local, I was going to say Tandy. Where would you buy a tool from?
I mean, I suppose it depends on the tool.
I'd probably go down Tottenham Court Road.
I guess there are still shops have there.
They some stuff. Anyway, according to The Independent, Apple says the parts that it will send out are the same ones and at the same price as the ones that it sells to Apple's authorized repair providers, of which there are quite a lot. Customers can also send back the parts that they have replaced to Apple. They can be then refurbished or recycled, and credits will be applied to your account for the parts that are swapped out, which is quite good. And Apple is pretty good at repairing and recycling and reusing old things, so that's pretty good. There is a fun line though in Apple's press release, which is this: for the vast majority of customers who do not have experience repairing electronics or electronic devices, visiting a professional repair provider with certified technicians who use genuine Apple parts is the safest and most reliable way to get a repair. The reason I find that so funny is because it's very, very heavy-handed it basically says, do not do this. It's dangerous. You're going to break things. It's easier to get someone who knows what they're doing to do it. And
hard to disagree with any of that, though.
No, I don't disagree with any of it. It's very true. But it gets even more amusing when you look at the guides needed to do this. So I looked up a manual that Apple gives out for the iPhone 13, which is available on Apple's website, but you have to follow a few steps to get it. I'm going to paste a link to it in the Discord so you can load it up, and we'll include a link in the MP3 file here and at uktechshow.com/episodes. Find it in the show notes. This one is, it's like an 80 or 85 page document. You'll need to repair an iPhone 13 screen. You need 16 different tools. There are a total of over 60 steps required to take the screen off and repair it. And if you scan through this repair manual, it is extremely thorough. I can't knock that. But it is replete with warnings, massive exclamation marks, disclaimers, caution, red text, everything you need to put off the small number of people who might think they could do this from doing it. It is not written like a consumer manual. It is written like a professional document, which is what it basically is. So my question to you, Ian, is, although this has now been made a thing that people in the UK can do, albeit also for a very limited number of products, is it something you would do? And is it something you think even a tech-minded DIY type person will or should do?
I think I could be persuaded to do it under certain circumstances. However, I don't believe it's cheap enough to really be worth it. From what I gather, the price is within a few percentage points of just taking it to a shop and getting them to do it for you, which to me means it's probably not worth the risk. If it was hundreds cheaper, I might consider it. But it's not. I've seen people do it on YouTube. The process seems absolutely, although full of warnings, actually seems very straightforward. You follow the instructions, the screen pops off, you replace the battery, you replace the screen if necessary, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm. It all looks actually really quite easy. It's fiddly. It requires patience, but nothing looks like it's going to be a real howler of a situation to me. It's not supported by this, but I have an old iPad Pro, one of the little ones, that's got a very cracked screen, meaning it's no longer usable. The iPad itself has still got life left in it. And if it was a possibility that I could replace that screen, I would seriously consider it. But looking around online, unless you're prepared to go with the dodgy aftermarket screen that isn't an Apple original, and these are true display, you know, things, aren't they? So you need the original display, really, to get the best out of it. It's just as expensive as it to buy a new one, and I can't abide that, really.
Is that this is where the environmental argument comes in,
yes,
and should remain,
so.
Which is that anything that allows you to repair something that is potentially otherwise fine, rather than chuck it away,
yes,
and replace it, is a good
even,
thing. And this doesn't
even if
reduce
it could be recycled. No, even if it could be recycled, it's still better to reuse something than it is to recycle it. And I would like to, you know, it's a perfectly serviceable iPad in perfect condition apart from the screen. So it would make sense for me to be able to do it. Unfortunately, I don't believe it's possible. So I would certainly consider that. And in fact, I have considered doing it by getting an iPad Pro off eBay, which perhaps has something other than a broken screen. So maybe doesn't boot or something like that. And taking the screen out of it and replacing the one in mine, because that is probably a more cost-effective way of doing it. You probably get a broken iPad for £100 or something.
Yeah.
But you're still gonna have to, you know, mess around with heating up glue and stuff like that, and, you know, all those risks. And removing a broken screen is painful experience, sometimes literally.
Yeah, and Apple in this technical document has at least on one occasion warned of the danger of death doing this. There's a great line that says, improper battery replacement, improper handling of parts, failure to discharge the battery before repair, or failure to follow the provided instructions could cause battery overheating, swelling, venting, leaking, or a battery thermal event, which could result in fire, injury, death, data loss, or damage to the device, parts, or other property. I mean, if that doesn't scare the crap out of you, then who knows? Speaking of crap, this conversation has been something of a finger tickling the prostate of our Discord because... Actually, sorry, that's a horrible mental image.
It's not a great one, but I mean, you know, it's a reminder stuff for men to get yourself checked, you know.
Indeed. Some good comments coming out about this. Mark in the live chat says, I think the last device I fixed myself was a Creative Zen MP3 player. I used to review those in 2007. But wasn't quite steady enough with the soldering iron and killed the backlight in the process. That is a shame. I gave a friend of mine, Tom, an old Creative Zen, which I believe he still uses. Wow. Rich says he'd probably give this a go if he had access to the correct tools. Well, you do. And if you don't have a broken phone, go and smash one and let us know how you get on. That would be good to have some hands-on experience. Don't die, though. Don't explode the battery. John says there are some cool options for changing old iPod spinning drives with SSDs, which is a very interesting idea.
Would you do that, Nate? You must have old iPods.
I do. I have an old iPod Classic, but I feel like taking it apart now it's past its life would be a little bit like desecrating the corpse of a loved one. I'd rather leave it to rest in peace.
I don't agree. If you could bring it back to life and give it a new, you know, new operating use, that'd be brilliant.
Nick says maybe it'll encourage some people who don't know what they're doing to offer it as a service, which could be potentially quite damaging. It's a good comment.
Oh, that's a very good comment. I like that's tickled me. I tried to take apart a Huawei phone once to repair it. So here's what happened.
Go on.
I put a SIM card in, a perfectly normal size SIM card, and it just disappeared inside the phone that sort of hopped outside the slot. And vanished inside. Apparently it was a known problem at the time. So I took it apart thinking I'd just be able to retrieve it and put the phone back together again. And those things are like a clock, mate, you know, a watch. Once you take them apart, there's a very often no getting them back together again.
Yes, I can imagine. And but John has shared a link to a story on Instructables that shows you how you can turn an old iPod into an SSD iPod. So we'll include a link to that in the show notes. Thank you for looking that up, John. Yeah, I have to say, I am not going to be repairing my phone myself with this. I would take it to a repair shop, but an authorized one, and do it that way. I have smashed the screen on one of my iPads, but it still works fine. So I simply put a screen protector over it, which feels like shutting the stable door after the horse is bolted a little bit. But it stops it from at least shattering on my desk and otherwise acts as a perfectly good secondary display to my left.
Yeah,
so
fair enough.
Pretty good. One other little Apple thing that I did want to mention... we're not really an Apple-heavy podcast normally anymore, but I did think it was worth noting that Apple has brought in much more flexible pricing to apps on the App Store, which is something that Android already has. But this is quite different for Apple. So essentially, you can now start selling an app in an app purchase, for that matter, in the UK for as little as 29 pence.
Ooh.
Or as much as £12,000.
£12,000. I'm gonna pop on a £12,000 app.
Yeah. I haven't found any at either cost. I couldn't find almost any that had used the new rounding facility that is available too, which means you can offer apps at £1, for instance. You know, a round number rather than a decimal. Which feels quite good. The closest I could find were some Safari browser extensions for sale for 49 pence, but it seems we're a bit early to see people wanting to experiment with flexible pricing. But I thought
Safari extensions are 49p.
Ad blockers mostly.
What about free ones?
Well, they're still free.
So who's going to pay 49p for something they can get for free?
Well, the point is that that app might have been 89 or 99 pence before. Now it can be offered even cheaper, which might undercut another one but still make you a bit of money.
Yes.
Is my guess. So I thought I'd point that out. I went through the top 200 paid apps and the top 200 paid games in the UK App Store, and none of them were taking advantage of this new pricing at the time of recording. So I think it's a bit early to tell. But if you are selling your apps and feel like charging 12 grand for it or 29p for it, probably not the same app, then, well, you can. So that's good news, isn't it? Okay, cool. Well, let us know if you have any thoughts on repairing your iPhones, particularly if you've got experience doing this, or maybe you'd like to have a go and let us know how you get on. That would be an interesting and, dare I say, entertaining process to hear about. So you can send us your emails to hello@uktechshow.com.
You know what, though? I never know whether those jingles are going to cut off prematurely or whether they're going to be longer anymore. You've really done a number on me, mentally speaking, there.
I apologise.
Anyway, it's quite okay. It's all part of the fun. It keeps me on my toes. Nate, plans are afoot to shut off terrestrial broadcast signals for both analogue radio and digital TV in the UK in just 8 years' time. I know, correct response. The BBC's Director General, Tim Davey, has spoken about the evolution of TV and radio and is convinced that moving to an internet delivery system represents the future of the BBC. And that might be true, but there's something to be said about the timescale for that being practical. The BBC is obviously under a lot of pressure at the moment to move to an alternate funding model that puts an end to the licence fee. And it sounds like this could be part of that, because with free-to-air terrestrial, it would be very difficult to move to a subscription-based model, if that's the intention behind this. Whereas if you went to, not an over-the-internet kind of thing, you could charge a subscription fee rather than the license fee. But switching off over-the-air broadcast is a big challenge. They've been trying to get rid of FM radio for ages, but that hasn't happened yet. And it's been suggested that this will all take place in the year 2030, along with the aforementioned digital terrestrial TV. Which is a big change, right? And doesn't, for FM at least, doesn't come with a massive reward. You're not saving a huge amount of spectrum. On the other hand, shutting TV would save a lot, which I guess could be reused for mobiles and the like. So obviously it's going to be a big issue. How do we make sure that everyone in the country has good enough internet to get their TV over the internet? And I think we're some years away from that. I don't know if you had any thoughts at this point, Nate, or questions.
I do. My first thought is that this feels just far too soon. Not even just for the internet reason that you mentioned,
yes,
but just simply getting the message out that it's coming and, you know, preventing people launching products that are going to immediately, or not immediately, but imminently become defunct and useless takes quite a long time. I mean, this is essentially turning off, if you consider analog and digital over the air to be the same thing, turning off like 100 years of convention in just 7 years' time, which is not very long at all. So I personally would be surprised if this happens before 2035, let alone 2030.
I agree.
And so that's my initial
thought. I don't even think FM would happen then. I just don't feel like there's a good reason to get rid of FM. I mean, you could refarm that spectrum for either digital radio, offering more choice. But my understanding is that they've struggled to get rid of digital radio capacity anyway, and that a lot of companies just haven't been able to make it work financially, especially local-based stations. So it's a difficult one, and I don't see... I mean, I'm still using an FM radio in the car. Both of the cars I've recently owned have only had FM radios with no option for digital. So I'm going
out
to carry
on using
though,
that. Out of interest, is that because you're a cheapskate?
It's in part, but also I think it's fair to say that DAB radios were not necessarily common until, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years ago. That might be a bit... It depends. I think it depends very much on the car. There's a lot of cars that are 10 years old that probably have Bluetooth and maybe older, but that would certainly have been an option. And I tend to spend not huge sums of money on my cars and, you know, get something older. And obviously that comes with FM.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, so it is partly being cheap, but it's also FM is quite good for cars. DAB wasn't so good, especially in the early days. It was problematic. I mean, it's much better now, and I'd rather have DAB. I think DAB's great. Much more radio station choice, better quality. And FM is a bit ropey these days. You can sort of tell it's being crowded out of the spectrum to some extent.
Mm.
So yes, it's one of those things. I just don't necessarily think 2030 is doable for radio, and
it is going to happen though, isn't it? I mean,
I guess the
thing about internet, you know, Davey said that moving to an IP system, internet delivery system, is the future, and I can believe that. But that doesn't mean that you're not still using cable, and it doesn't mean that you're not still using over the air, because both, you know, internet can be delivered via transmitters and via satellite and via cables, and will continue to for quite a long time. So there may be something to be said for that. I think sometimes you think about, when you hear about being delivered over internet, you think about the cable, you know, your Virgin cable or...
Mm-hmm.
Or something that's coming through the dish, but actually there are loads of ways to get internet into the house, and they can probably do this. It's just the time scale is what's sticking, really.
Yes, and I'm guessing that there are people in parts of the country still on sort of 5 megabits per second, maybe a bit more, maybe
if
8.
They're lucky.
And they're probably screaming at the radio or the podcast box right now going, yes, but we still don't have functional internet, really. I've stayed in holiday homes with internet in the sort of 2-3 megabits per second. So I know that those places are still out there and very unlikely to be serviced by faster anytime soon. And if you're looking at doing good quality TV, you know, you need sort of 5 megabits per second, a constant rate, just to do the TV. So it's a big ask, frankly. Yeah. Radio's a lot easier. You could get radio over virtually any internet connection and probably have been able to since dial-up days, almost.
There are still parts of the country, according to Uswitch, where the average broadband speed is less than 1 megabit per second.
Yeah, and this is the problem, and you've got to solve that. But not only have you got to solve it, you've also got to solve it in a way that people can afford. Like, it's okay for you and me, like, spending our 50 quid a month on our broadband, but there's a lot of people for whom that is just not a possibility, financially speaking. And they're, you know, and as such, because we value, you know, speed as a relation in relationship to what we charge, they're stuck on those rubbish broadband. So it's exclusionary, and the BBC should not be about that. It's really problematic, and you know, the part of the universal service obligation has to be to get TV and radio out to literally everyone in the country. And at the moment, it does that very well. So I don't think 2030 is achievable at all, and I'll be absolutely surprised. I think it's got something to do with the fact that they said 2027 was going to be the end of the licence fee. We could well have a different government by then, or this government, or another government, you know, same party, might change its approach to how it happens, or might look at the actual, you know, the reasonable nature of it and think, no, this isn't achievable. So who knows? But I also wanted to just add a bolt onto this that was notified to me by our patron Charlotte, who's not actually listening live today.
Give it up for Charlotte.
She's got better things to do, so this will be a nice treat for her when she listens to the podcast. But she pointed me to a tweet that noted the BBC has been given permission by Ofcom to extend the iPlayer content window. So at the moment, it might be things are on there for 7 days, 30 days or a year. I couldn't have described that worse if I tried.
Don't worry, mate. It's okay. I know you're cold.
But they have been given the permission to extend that now. So it might be that everything would get a year. It obviously still needs to be a part of a contract negotiation. They can't just do it, but they are now allowed to ask the question, which previously Ofcom prohibited them from doing. So it could be that everything will get a year on iPlayer from some time when they can renegotiate those contracts. That little story for you.
That's good. And I found a list of fastest and slowest UK counties for internet at the moment. And would you like to have a guess at the slowest? You know, I can bring my... Shall I bring the little quiz music in? It's an unofficial quiz, but we could probably bring the little quiz music in here, shall we? Here we go. Do you want to have a guess at the slowest?
And we're talking counties here, are we?
Yes. Slowest in the UK. And that's the whole of the UK, so that includes Scotland and Northern Ireland.
Okay.
And Wales.
Just going to have a quick squiz at a map, and I'm going to go and say that I reckon the slowest is going to be... Durham.
Durham. Well, yeah. I'll tell you something. Although you're wrong, you're close.
Oh, is it Cumbria?
That's even closer, mate. Ooh. Even closer.
Northumberland?
No, you're way out now.
Oh. That's Lancashire.
No. I'll put you out of your misery. It's Stirling.
Oh.
Up in Scotland.
North of the border.
Indeed.
Yeah, that's the problem you see, because my map stopped at Scotland and I can't name all the Scottish counties. So, hey-ho.
But Cumbria, you said, I think. And
I did.
The average speed there is 33 megabits per second.
That's not bad.
Stirling's is 26. This is on average. And the Scottish Highlands, actually, which you'd expect to be the slowest, is only the second slowest at 27 on average. So that's quite cool.
I mean, I've said this before, and I'll probably say it again. It's often cities that have the biggest problems.
Well, you know, you say yes. That. Let's come to that. I should point out, actually, that Nick, before we mentioned this in our live chat, did correctly guess that... Scotland would have the slowest. You didn't include an entire country there, but we'll still give you a bonus point. Do you want to have a guess at the fastest? You mentioned cities. Do you want to have a guess at the fastest county for broadband in Britain? This is according to fiberheroes.co.uk.
Manchester.
We'll include a link. No, mate. Manchester's in the north. You should know that, obviously. This will be in the south.
All right, go on then.
Because of the wild, unfair nature of investment into all things. Surrey.
I'll get a room. What?
Yep. Surrey, your favourite county.
Well, I live in it, so exactly. And it's not my favourite. I don't like it that much at all, but here I am.
What? 59 megabits per second on average. And the second fastest, staying... Do you want to have a guess at the second fastest?
Berkshire.
Nope. Nowhere close. No. Oh. Think about this podcast. Think about me. Think about where I live.
Oh, is it Essex?
That's an insult. Hearts. I'm in Hertfordshire, mostly.
You're on the border.
Yes.
You're on the border.
Hertfordshire.
I just want everyone to know that I'm not making a wild claim by saying he's in Essex, because it's the line is very bendy at that border.
It does technically go through our garden, yes. I go between Hertfordshire and Essex on my walk home from the station. Let's see. I think you were pretty good on that.
You win.
There you go. Well, that's a first, I feel.
Yeah, you can have a you win. I thought that was quite fun. Much.
Yeah, it was... Off the cuff. So, yeah.
Yes. My average is pretty high because we have fibre to the premises, so it's a gigabit up and a gigabit down. But the average is still 59.
Yes, I hate you.
I know.
Sorry,
you're doing
I don't love you really.
No, I love you. I love you too. But my internet is better than yours.
Here I am languishing on 350. Again, though, these are not speeds that most people enjoy. Most of the country does not, first of all, prioritise this as a home expense. Probably happy with 25 meg because it's a bit more affordable.
Yeah.
And secondly, there's a lot of people that just simply can't afford those kind of speeds. So anyway, lots to be done before this could be a reality, I would say.
Indeed. Cool. Well, let us know if you want, if you're one of these people, because we are, that would like to tell us how fast your internet is. You can let us know, hello@uktechshow.com. You think that we just say that because we don't, but we don't really care. Genuinely, I would love to read out the speeds of our listeners' internet and where they're based.
Yeah, me too.
And how you acquire it. We are those sorts of people. Ian's wedding present to me was a shoehorn.
Can I get a shoehorn and a broadband router in chat, please?
Absolutely, you can get those things. And while they're being pasted, let's listen to some. Let's listen to interstitial2.wav. Thank you, patrons, for supporting us. You are the life and soul of the podcasting audience that we consider to be ours. And thank you to everyone who's been backing us through these tough economic times. Sentence I remember saying a lot back in 2008, but we are saying again. If you would like to get the full version of the show ad-free, you can join like so many people are doing right now in listening and chatting with us live as we record, get extra message, so on and so forth. Go to patreon.com/UK Tech. And if you are one of those people listening live or subscribing to us, you're going to get our next story where we're going to go through all the weird and wonderful phones that apparently, according to Pocket Lint, we won't admit owning. We had a piece of feedback. It came in from regular listener Raphael, who mentions a few things, but he did point out that there's an amazing movie about space I love to rewatch from time to time called Contact, and there is a saying in there that applies to our discussion, which is, if there's no other life in the universe, it would be a big waste of space. Now, I feel I should point out that this is my favourite film of all time, and one of my favourite books of all time, and if, Raphael, you haven't heard it, there is an episode, a special episode we did.
We can't tell you the number because there's something really wacky about the episode numbers in that period.
Yeah, we did an episode with Tom and Veronica, Tom Merritt and Veronica Belmont, Ian and I, where we broke
and your
down
friend from the what's the oh, space podcast?
Pamela Gay from Astronomy Cast was also on, and we broke down Contact as a movie and a book and explored, you know, what was true, what was not, you know, some of the facts behind the fiction. Well worth re-listening to. It's an excellent, it's probably one of my favorite episodes we've ever done of this show. So do have a look at that in the podcast archives. We'll include a link as well. It's worth a listen to. We should do more stuff like that. I really enjoyed doing
I'd be very happy to. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that we could do, TV stuff, that might be quite good fun.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I mean, it'd be good to do Interstellar.
Yeah, we could do Interstellar. Maybe we could resurrect that. Well, we'll
think about what else would be really worth talking about.
We'll come back to that, and we'll see if we can get Tom on to talk about Interstellar as well. Speaking of Arrival, I just watched that the other day. Another of my favourite films.
You know, I'm not sure I liked Arrival. I probably need to watch it again.
You're wrong.
Can I stream it somewhere?
I don't know. I bought it on Apple. On iTunes.
Okay. There's a. It's my favourite, probably my favourite meme of all time. She's got the whiteboard, hasn't she? And people write different things on the board.
Yes.
And
yes.
The best one is it gets used around Christmas, and it's just simply "When's bins?" Because no one knows when the bins are.
Mate, I don't know when the bins are.
Ever. Yeah.
In our house. But I'll tell you who knows where all his bins are. It's Tom Merritt. Here's what he's been talking about on the show this week.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, data scientist Andrea Jones-Roy and developer Nika Monfort talked with us about how to deal with the problems of algorithms and still use them well. John C. Dvorak explained why he's feeling some positivity about autonomous trucking. Rich DeMuro has great last-minute tech gift ideas. We discuss what tech has done to the format of music hits. And did you know that the fastest-growing brand in the world is Meta? But for Gen Z, it's Roku. We explain why we think that is, all that, and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
There he is, the man, the legend.
got to listen to anything where John C. Dvorak is feeling positive about something.
Well, I remember
that doesn't happen every day, does it?
No. Well, I remember listening to that episode and thinking that he was actually mostly you, but a couple of decades older, which is great. Which is great.
Fond memories of John C. Dvorak talking about things.
Still loved Cranky Geeks back in the day.
Yeah.
One of my favourite shows from back in 2005 or 6, whenever it was. Thank you, Tom. And thank you, retrospectively, John C. Dvorak. Thank you, Ian. I think it's
My pleasure.
It's been a great pleasure, hasn't it? Yeah. And
yes, it's very nice.
And thank you to everyone who is listening to us for free and leaving us reviews on the Apple Podcast Store or wherever you're getting your podcasts. We say it every week, but we genuinely mean it. It would mean the world to us if you would tell a friend this Christmas. Maybe you'd like to print out a transcript of the podcast and wrap it up and give it to someone you like as a gift. It
don't
will
for God's
stimulate
sakes do that.
Discussion over the Christmas table. And honestly, what could be a better gift than Ian on demand? Frankly, I don't know of anything that I'd rather have personally.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I think it's the best thing ever. Anything else you want to add, Ian? As ever, you're getting the last word.
Well, hopefully my TV will be here by the time we record next. I'll keep you updated.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.